Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Normal World. I'm your host, Dave Landau, and joining me as usual, please welcome Angela.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. Excited.
Good. And sitting in today for Quarter Black, who is out in Las Vegas, please welcome the return of Matt McLowry. Great. And where can we see you besides right now?
I'm going to be with you in Tacoma April 18th and 19th. And then I'm going to be with you in Spokane April 25th and 26th. And since all of those shows are going to be completely sold out, I will also be headlining the 27th. And at the end of next month, I will be with you in Hilarities also. And that'll sell out too. So I'm also headlining the Thursday and Sunday if you guys are
in old Cleveland.
Yep.
Yes, and also, please check out my special, A Prison Tenant, is now officially available on Amazon, Tubi, and Comedy Genius. Check it out. I like the little art there.
And it's like a tattoo.
Yeah.
It's cute.
Yeah, it's like my little tramp stamp, which I do have. Also, that's it for me. Well, no, this weekend I'm going to be at the Orpheum in Twin Falls, Idaho. I do come out, Idaho. I mean, God. All right. Joining us today, he is the frontman and songwriter for one of my favorite bands. Please welcome Steve Jackson.
Ow!
From the Pie Tasters. Hey, how are you, sir?
Thanks for having me. Great.
Oh, dude, where can we see the Pie Tasters or you? Where can we see your upcoming dates?
April 26th in Leesburg, Virginia. The 27th, we're up in Sayreville, New Jersey. In May, we're heading down to Florida for a few shows. June, we're in Pennsylvania and Maryland. ThePieTasters.com.
Cool.
Check that for the tour dates. And
yeah, right there's the Auto Bar. Right there. So that's June 8th at the Auto Bar. If you happen to be in the Baltimore, go check them out. I'm telling you, you're going to love the show. It's unbelievable. And what?
Did someone say pie tasting?
Who are you?
I am Jean Benet Pasquale, the pie taster. I travel the world to taste pies.
I'm not doing this today.
Give me a chance to showcase my show, please.
All right. Do you have a flyer or something?
Yes, I have a flyer. Please show it.
Okay.
It's called Jean Benet Pasquale's I Love Pies.
You just get him out of here.
I believe I
want you
be
to
on the show.
I want you to hurt him this time. Hurt him.
No.
No. Like the poor chef.
The show. Oh boy. I can't taste pies like this.
I apologize. We accidentally booked a pie taster.
Third time in a row now this happened.
I know. I hope you heard him. How did the band get the name The Pie Tasters?
We, as all third wave ska bands, we aspired to be from England. And these British friends of ours that were living in the U.S. for the summer, they were from Northern England. And in Northern English parlance, pie taster means fat guys. And so when we would come over, they would... they'll eat your pies, they'll tell you lies, you won't believe the bastard size there, the pie tasters. And like, oh, that's cool, these English guys are, we're, so we, kind of in the vein of that band Bad Manners, we thought that, oh, this will be good, people will think we're from England and give us some cred in the ska scene.
That's awesome. Well, it's interesting because your band is soul, reggae, punk, ska, like it's a whole... It's like a mishmash, which is what I love about it. I mean, you definitely have like the ska feel, but... You have, I mean, the punk feel. You have the soul feel. Like, what? Why do you, I shouldn't say why. You've reinvented a sound. That's what I love about your band. Like, you can't really pinpoint to exactly what it is.
Yeah, we're a great party band. We're a great bar band. And like all bands, you start playing covers. And then you realize that a lot of the ska bands were playing covers of Motown stuff and Stax Soul and... You know, then you kind of branch out and we would try and play real obscure covers and people would think that we wrote the songs. And so it made it easier than writing.
Well, Led Zeppelin songs. Made a career out of that one.
There you go.
Yeah.
We haven't been sued yet.
No. That's awesome. Well, so you kind of started, though, as a party band with no intention of actually making it in music.
No, and that's why we're pure of soul. We started with the worst business model, and that's 10 people. a three-piece power pop or a singer-songwriter is the best way to go into music, but we decided to bring all of our friends and bought an old school bus and drove around in circles getting free beer and phone numbers. And
that was your first tour, right?
Yeah, we...
broke up as a result of that, correct?
Well, we lost several members who thought we were insane. And they're all well-to-do with beach houses and things like that. And we're still driving around in circles in old buses.
So were you guys met in, was it in Washington, D.C. where you guys were founded?
Yeah, we were all suburban Washington, D.C. kids and went to school at Virginia Tech. And
okay.
So, you know, put together the party band. And
was it the Slug? I'm sorry. I'm
the Slugs.
The Slugs, that was your first?
Early iterations.
Okay.
The Dance Crashers, but then there was already a band called the Dance Hall Crashers. So there was a few different names before we hit the scene and started releasing music. And
what was your first moment that you kind of broke?
Oh, well, there was this label.
It is a reward. It doesn't necessarily have to be what other, you know, but what you loved.
A little validation, you know, it's like when that comedian that you open for recognizes how funny you are. It's that kind of thing. And so we had been driving around and, you know, playing bars and parties, and Moon Records out of New York decided that they were going to put out a couple of our records. And we're like, oh, we've arrived. Moon Records is going to put out our albums. And so I did a couple albums with them. And then Tim from Rancid started a label called Hellcat. And,
oh, Armstrong. Yeah.
Yeah, Tim
Armstrong. I have his Fender Hellcat.
Well,
yeah, I don't know how to play it, but I have it.
Anyway, get your son some lessons.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know, bit by bit, Dickie from the Bosstones took us on tour right when their big album, Let's Face It, broke big. And so we got to see the world with the Bosstones while they were doing The Impression That I Get, their big giant hit.
So 96?
Yeah, it's 96, yeah. 97. That was, I graduated eighth grade in 97, and that was our class song.
Oh, is it really? Yeah, well, it was huge. That's what got me into ska.
Yeah, it was, and it was great to ride on these coattails, you know. It was just really fun to be a part of all of that, and got to tour with Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros and Reverend Horton Heat.
I was going to ask about Reverend Horton Heat. I was a big fan of Liquor in the Front, or Liquor in the Back, and that was the first album I found. It was at Harmony House, and it was just this random song, but I ended up loving him.
Incredible songwriter and performer, you know, what a great stage presence and what a great show. And we did a North American tour with him, and Scott, his drummer, I think is in Dallas, no longer plays drums with them, but
okay.
So, you know, just got to see the world. Instead of joining the military, we got to do it with bands, and it was...
What's the best?
Yeah, definitely.
And in 2003, it had to be good because you were actually chosen to back James Brown, which we have a picture of him. And that's Aaron Soward. I don't know what he's doing. He doesn't know what he's doing.
But that's how I remember him.
How was it to work with
PCP?
Yes. How was it? Yes. How was it?
Well, he
like to smell crack.
He had cleaned up his act by that point,
yeah.
And his management wanted him to do these. You know, the radio stations would have their holiday shows, and so he was going to do DC and Philadelphia and New York, and he didn't want to bring his band. And so the local WHFS is a local alternative station, and they contacted us, and we had just been on tour in Europe. And at the end of the night, we would get on the bus and listen to Live at the Apollo every night for some reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just this great 5-week tour, and we get back and 2 days later, hey, James Brown wants you guys to back him up. Do you think you can do this? And we're like, yeah, sure. And so we sent a karaoke version of 4 or 5 songs. 2 days later, James Brown and his guitar player are at this little studio in Fairfax, Virginia, where we worked out. And he's, you know, when I do this, you hit this part of the song. And when I spin around on one leg, you do this part of the song. And when I point here, you do this. And then he left and we worked for another 3 hours with the guitar player. And the next night we're at the MCI Center in front of 20,000 people playing Sex Machine with James Brown. And it was incredible.
So you being a front man, was he the best front man you had ever seen?
Without a doubt.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's got to be few that compare.
He had injured his leg.
Did he do the thing where he works the critique of you into the song as he's doing it, where he tells you to hit the bass and tells you?
We knew ahead of time not to screw up because, you know, he's legendary for docking people's pay if they miss a part of the song. And so we were on our best behavior. And when we rehearsed, he said, as long as we didn't really screw up, he wouldn't hold us to, cause you know, we were filling guys, but he had injured his leg and, he rode out onto stage in a golf cart and he got up on stage and we're all just kind of vamping and he pops the brace off of his leg and spins around on one foot, you know, and it just became James Brown. And I mean, it was incredible. And the next night he played with Dave Matthews' band. And then the next night it was Lenny Kravitz's band. And then he was on Howard Stern and we listened and Howard Stern's trying to talk about these other shoes. Howard, I don't want to talk about those guys. I want to talk about my boys at Pie Tasters. The sound of 1960. And we're just like, holy crap. I cannot believe this is happening. And so, yeah.
It's got to be the greatest moment imaginable when arguably, but really not arguably, the greatest soul singer of all time drops your name.
It's incredible. And then whenever he would come back to DC, he'd put us on the guest list. And you know, we're in the VIP section with the mayor and, you know, this whole contingent of
in DC
dignitaries.
Was he still doing crack?
No, this not is Marion
Barry. I know, I'm kidding. This is 03.
I wish.
You wish it was Marion Barry. Dude, you would have had a night of your life. Marion Barry and James Brown is not something a white man would survive.
Yeah, both of them had cleaned up their act by the time
by the time you landed there, yeah.
He just sounded like a big name comic you get to open for, except the part where he keeps his promises.
Oh, no. That's a good point. Yeah, that must be nice to open for a big name and then do it again. Well, you toured with you have some amazing. You worked with the Ramones.
We played with the Ramones.
And I like Johnny, but Joey struggled with OCD. Do you have any moment where you had to deal with that?
No, and by the time we played with them, it was like their farewell kind of tour, and we were doing lots of bad things in the dressing room and they were waiting for their salmon to show up before the show. So
again, you're getting into rock. And
we missed out on all of the good, you know, those kind of good stories. And, we were doing
it's still the Ramones.
I mean, you can ask me about my marriage if you want OCD stories.
Good point. Yeah. How is Dee Dee at home?
She's doing great. I mean, I had to spray down a suitcase with Lysol this week.
I know you did.
Par for the course. You know, there's trade-offs, as Thomas Sowell says. That's no true. Solutions, just trade-offs.
Yeah. Well, they hated, I know the Ramones, I believe it was End of the Century that was produced by Phil Spector. Like, they hated Phil Spector. Which, I mean, when somebody points
I've heard things
at you to get you to sing better, you tend to not like somebody. But what's your take on that album, and what's your favorite Ramones album?
I like Beat on the Brat and the KKK Took My Baby Away and some of those classics, you know. But if Phil Spector wants to pull a gun on me and tell me to sing better, come on, bring it on. I think he's dead now, but I would have welcomed that.
Just a guy in a crazy wig. Yeah. I mean, he makes you a go-getter.
You know, I'm hungry, so yeah. I'm willing to work for it.
That's one of those bands where you worked with No Doubt.
Yeah, we've crossed paths with lots. I mean, and you know, in the 90s, the ska thing was ridiculous and
massive.
So,
there was Real Big Fish, Boss Tones.
Boss
Tones was my favorite.
I'm
trying to think of who the big, because there was three or four. I think Bare Naked Ladies attempted.
Yeah, I wouldn't throw them in.
No. And I don't mean to offend you.
No. And I think Sublime too has probably had the biggest chart success, and they were more on the reggae kind of side of things, but they were definitely lumped in with ska.
I just there became a lot at that point on MTV. There were a lot of three word bands: Cherry Pop and Daddy's Squirrel, Squirrel Nut Zippers.
Yep,
they were doing their own thing though. I remember.
Well, they were all kind of doing the same look for a second, and then, not Sublime, but Sublime was so specifically Orange County rock, it almost seemed, that it bled into the rest of the country, and we all liked it, but I don't know if there was something you could relate it. It's kind of like what you guys do, honestly. Like, I wouldn't go, you do ska.
Right.
When you necessarily because you do these different versions that, I mean, I guess these other bands do as well.
Well, and back then it was way more of a specific genre, and we were aware that we weren't playing traditional ska. And, you know, there's this band Hepcat that's the greatest ska band ever. And Greg Lee just passed away recently, and it's a big loss. And, but so at the time when people would talk to us about ska, oh, we're not a ska band. We're ska, rock, and soul. We tried to, you know, distance ourselves a little bit from that. But we did do a big tour with Cherry Pop and Daddies, and we've been friends with those guys forever. And it was at the height of the swing revival. And we knew their audience was going to hate us.
Okay.
And usually, you know, opening, you get $250, but it's the exposure. And so they offered us this big tour, and we told our management, the audience is going to hate us. And he's like, well, don't worry. We'll just ask for an insane amount of money. They'll never, you know, go for it. Well, of course, they said, sure. And so we had to do the tour, and we did 5 weeks of people in zoot suits, like giving us the finger for 40 minutes every night. And it was just like no reflection on Cherry Pop and Daddies, because they're a great band and they're good dudes, but their audience could not have cared less about the Pie Tasters.
Yeah.
We can't swing dance to this.
Yes. It's crazy when you're dressed like the band. Like, you're not just wearing a shirt of the band. It's like you're wearing.
If you have a suit with an elastic waistband, you should just punch yourself in the face. Oh, dude.
There's no worse look. Yeah. You're not in the Mexican Mafia in the 1940s. No. There's a reason to have that.
Not Malcolm X before his awakening.
Exactly. Yeah. It's exactly who it was. Yeah. Before he admitted he was black. Yeah. Back when he went by Red. with that, like, did you ever have somebody flat out just hate what you did then, and almost to the point that you were in danger?
Well, it's funny you should mention.
Somebody whipped out a Tommy gun at them.
Thank God, no, but it could have been worse. We're the bad boys of ska, and we tell stories about life, and they're not necessarily how-to manuals of how to live your life, but we have some songs about off-color characters and situations. And during the performance of one such song in Gainesville, Florida, a young man who was virtue signaling to some females came up and informed me that what I was doing was a hate crime. And I, you know, I couldn't really hear what he was saying. And I leaned forward, and it was a tall stage. And I leaned down and said, what did you say? And he goes, hate crime. And he sprayed mace in my face. Ooh. And I could feel the mace like in the back of my eyeballs. And I was like, God damn it,
dude,
that's not good.
And that's a hate crime.
Yes. Well, were you on stage?
We were playing a show. We were playing a song that he didn't like. And so I told the band to just like play an instrumental, and the bass player and I jumped out and chased him down and beat him for the remainder of the song.
Best and show ever.
The virtue signaling.
If you're going to mace
male
someone.
Feminist had mace. Yeah. Yeah. What kind of guy has mace?
The guy who would...
He was blowing his rape whistle while we were punching him.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were very happy that one of our friends said a week later she saw him at the grocery store, and he had one of those arm casts with the stick that holds your arm out.
Yes, so you know it's going to be a
definitely
while.
Definitely connected with him, and I it was worth it for the story.
Well, that's the best, because you know he's got to go to a rehab and learn how to redo this.
Plenty of time to think about it.
Yeah, and you know he also didn't have sex with any girls that night because he's a male feminist.
He didn't.
Like, even if he wasn't hurt.
Well, and they were probably all lesbians, so they didn't want anything to do with him.
And no, nobody cared that he did that. He's like, I'm going to go show him with my mace.
Which song was it?
Pleasure Bribe.
Oh, okay.
And I did not write this song, but I think the part he didn't like was, I've got $5 to not look at your face. So that.
Can you imagine being in Gainesville, Florida with that football team and everything that goes on there? And I forgot the name of the guy who killed... who ended up going, Aaron Rodgers. No, not Aaron Rodgers. No, I can't believe you said that. You made me. No. Aaron Hernandez. Good. I can't wait for the 800
Some people would agree with you about Aaron Rodgers.
That's true. But yeah, Aaron Hernandez. that man you beat was Aaron Hernandez. Changed his whole outlook on everything. He's like, but, oh man, I don't know what I.
Well, it's like when you're in the I'm South gay, and somebody's like, member. Don't disrespect women, or that's racist. And you're like, why here? Here?
Yeah, like, are you sure? Because your wife has a shiner. Well, they'll come up to you and say the weird. Remember North Carolina?
Yeah.
He came up to me and goes, you know, that Amish joke you said was a bit too far. I'm like, are you serious?
They're never going to see it.
No,
or ever. Hear it.
But he was genuinely upset. And it was when that show, Amish Mafia, was on.
Yeah.
So it was just basically about, like I don't know, so it's probably the horse's head joke, something.
He enjoyed the rest of the show. He says, I just felt that was in poor taste.
He's like, yeah. And he's wearing overalls and he's like six and a half feet tall. Yeah. And Matt and I are like, we both heard that, right? This is at a show where a guy motorboated a woman he didn't know.
That was that was your closer.
And I
that's
ended
how,
the show.
That's how great of a show that was.
Yeah.
That was at the comedy club that was part of a chain comedy. It's a Comedy Zone. Fuck it. It's a Comedy Zone. Yeah,
it's not there anymore, yeah. That one.
But it was in an old Blockbuster. And so the sign was shaped. The sign was shaped like a Blockbuster logo. But to make it make sense, it said the hottest ticket in town, which is their slogan nowhere else. None of their other locations.
Written on the ticket sheet.
Yes, yes.
And then you just walk into this very narrow room that used to be a Blockbuster and go, oh, I'm going to just eat shit for the next 20 minutes.
Well, that was the one where I walked in and I don't even get a word out of my mouth. And there's this woman who's still eating nachos and is balding, has female pattern baldness from malnutrition, just looks at me and goes, you're crazy.
Oh, yeah, I got mad.
Yeah, and I'm like, I got to be here 25 more minutes. Neat.
I was in the back behind glass where they could see me, you know? Yeah.
And then the woman...
You would check out.
This is a woman who's old enough to have an adult daughter there, because I remember the daughter coming up to us and saying, like, I thought you were funny, but, you know, you kind of brought it up on yourself. And you said, by going on stage, that's literally all he did. Just like, well, yeah.
You never know what's going to set him off. Yeah.
People are the dumbest when it comes to that stuff. What's the worst experience you've had on a stage?
Being maced.
Oh, yeah. Well, you just asked you. Like, there's one that's way worse. You're like, well, it would probably be the gang rape.
I got really drunk in Malmo, Sweden one time, and the audience was there for the disco show that started at 11.
Oh, you don't want to mess with
that. We played the early show, and... Oh, no. I got really drunk and that was a bad one. I took Xanax thinking that it would make me sleep the drunk off, and instead I got up on the tour bus and peed on our trumpet player.
I can only imagine
a trumpet. You thought it was.
He's like, Steve, you're not in the bathroom.
I can only imagine a bunch of glittery blonde Swedes with roller skates just upset that you're not
terrible.
Disco.
And leading to that,
hitting you with platform shoes with goldfish in them,
just doing wonderful moves while they're. It's very eloquent.
We had played Germany the night before, and the club guy gave us this homegrown weed in a Folgers can, and we were assured that it would be no problem going to Sweden with weed, and
yeah.
We are pulling up in the tour bus, and I'm the only one awake, and I see all these dogs. I'm like, oh, my God, and I run in the bathroom and dump it in the toilet and flush it, and then we're pulling away, and the driver said, why did you go in the bathroom? And I told him, he said, oh, no, it goes straight out. And so then I look out the back window, and there are all these dogs standing around this pile of, like, shit and marijuana.
It goes Sorry. Straight out. That's not a good tour bus.
He's like, hey, look at all the marijuana and this shit. How much are they eating on that bus?
Is that kale? Yes.
Never seen anything like this. Oh, it's incredible. I always ask this because where I'm from, but like you played Detroit. Oh. Did you ever play Harpo's?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Harpo's and what's the... Is it the Majestic or the... There's
Magic Stick.
Magic Stick, Majestic, Magic Bag.
Theater, and then the Shelter.
Oh, yeah.
The downstairs room.
Ann Arbor.
And then...
Oh, no, that's... The Shelter is in...
That's where they... is Ann Arbor.
Yeah, yeah. The Shelter's where they do the rap battle in 8 Mile, which is under St. Andrews Hall.
Right, St. Andrews
is that's a killer venue, both of those.
Joe Strummer at St. Andrews, the Shelter with the Pie Tasters.
Really?
Big room, you know, big... And then smaller room for...
Smaller rooms kick ass, though, for acoustics.
So one time, oh, yeah, that's a great room.
And, so good.
Yeah. We had this old Greyhound bus, and we were pulling into the parking lot, and this lady ran into us, and it was, you know, it was like 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, because we had driven all night, and it was an insurance scam, and I just gave her money to leave because she was going to call the police, and the guy at the club is like, no, it's just a scam. You shouldn't have given her any money. And I was like, well, I didn't know, and... And then the Falcon Club in Hamtramck was...
Oh.
This guy, Dean, owned the Falcon Club, and we would, for some reason, we had this, we would play Detroit on the first Tuesday of the month, and we'd play Denver on like the third Thursday, and we just spent the rest of the time driving around in circles. And
okay.
So it was wintertime, we're in Hamtramck, and the bus was getting some work done, and so we were going from Dean's house to the bus place, and we drove past the Falcon Club, and he goes, "God damn it." I was like, "What's wrong?" He goes, "They stole my trash can or trash bags." And I was like, "Your trash bags?" And he goes, "Do you know how much contractor bags cost?" And these people had dumped the trash out in the alley and taken the contractor bags. And it's like January and it's all frozen. And so we get out and I have to chip up ice in the alley and put the trash into new contractor bags with Dean at the Falcon Club. So that's my memory of Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
It's just...
It's special. Well, Hamtramck, especially because it's like the greatest Polish food.
Oh, yeah.
That you'll ever eat. But then at the same time at night, you're like, why is the road moving? And you're like, that's rats.
It's something else.
It's just waving like this. When you pulled up to Harpo's, what was your first thought? This is going to go well?
Yeah. I think that was the time we pulled in, and at the Welcome to Detroit sign, there was a guy with his pants around his ankles pissing, and he just flicked us off.
He's always there. That's the mayor.
The mayor. Yeah. He's walking with us.
That's Detroit's Ronald McDonald.
Yeah. I mean, the shows are always great, and the audience shows up, and they have a good time, and you know, people want to be entertained, whether it's comedy or music, and so as long as they have fun and...
The music, that's the good thing about that that city is like they when they love music and all the venues are really dead. And I mean, when you look at the beginning of the punk scene, I mean, you really can't, I mean, Iggy Pop, I mean, you even, I would even say Ted Nugent to a degree, but it was when he was with the Amboy Dukes.
Sure.
But all that started in the Grandy Ballroom, I mean, so much of that is punk. Like
the MC5 from Detroit.
Oh, hell yeah, Motor City 5.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, and yeah. We just found out.
We were just talking about that.
Yeah, Wayne Kramer died, I guess, last
February,
month.
February.
Yeah, just recently, and I didn't realize he had passed away. Because he was sort of a bucket list person I wanted to interview as well, and yeah, that was a bummer. But yeah, they're amazing because I mean, they were on stage when like race riots started in the middle of Belle Isle. Like,
yeah.
He's got a great book about all that stuff where, because I mean, that music was really unacceptable at the time where they were trying to pull that off.
Yeah.
They weren't popular.
Oh, and that was like pre-punk almost, you know?
Sure.
And then our boys, the Meat Men, were from up in Michigan. I don't know if you're familiar with the
Meat Men. I am familiar, actually.
Tesco V is one of the most hilarious, smartest people I've ever met. And we got to tour with them, and he lived in D.C. for a while. So, but last time we were in Michigan, he came out and hung out. So it was good to catch up with Tesco.
Where are you going to go to Michigan again?
I'm sure, yeah.
I hope you do. I want to catch the show. There's tons of great venues there that I'm sure people would go to. So I would want to ask this, Henry Rollins, you know,
I've met him.
Did you work with him?
Anybody's friends with Henry Rollins other than Nina McKay, but, I have great respect for him and his music and his writing. And
yeah. He's actually his stunt double. Yeah. He's like, if Henry Rollins was as funny as Henry Rollins thinks he is.
Oh, no.
Well, I like Henry Rollins.
I don't.
I just think you're funny.
You don't. No. What's to like? What's to like?
Oh, don't do that. He's in the market.
Oh yeah, he's a Blaze subscriber. That guy.
Oh no, he's not. Were you influenced? Yeah, that's a good point. He's never here. Were you a black fag?
I love them. My favorite kind.
That was Freudian.
When I'm looking for one, it's gonna be a black one.
Yeah, you met him when you walked in. I hope he took care of you.
He said what everyone's thinking.
Are you a... So were you into Black Flag?
Yeah. We're going to cut that out, right?
I doubt it. I hope we do. Mm. Actually, we won't because it's a flub, but it's not.
He's kind of a guy you like as an idea, and then you pay attention to him, and you're like, this guy sucks.
Well, I don't know. I think originally, have you ever read Get in the Van? Of course you haven't.
I read it. I listened to his spoken word, and that's like, oh no,
that's different. I like the Get in the Van, like when you go from being that teenager that worked at an ice cream place to being the lead singer of a band.
Yeah,
and like that sort of adventure that he took. I think that's a very fascinating
read.
I'm not saying that everything that he's ever done is magic. And no offense again. It's good you said no to being friends with him. You should have said yes, and it would be less awkward right now.
The reason, No, and as a teen, I would have loved to have been friends with Henry Rollins. But, you know, we had worked
might
our
come
way
in
up
here and put in on his boots and pretend to be taller than me.
He can deadlift more than I can, I'm sure.
Not anymore, he can't.
He doesn't lift it?
No.
But, you know, we worked hard as a band, and we were playing a bunch of festivals in Europe, and Rollins' band was on some of these festivals, and we're a fan. You know, the guys in the band, we all like Rollins' band. And so years later, the 930 Club, which is the greatest independent venue in the country as far as I'm concerned, it's in Washington, D.C., and we've played it going back to the 90s every year, at least once a year. And they had this big anniversary party, and Henry Rollins was the MC. And Ian MacKaye and the Evens were playing, and, you know, Dave Grohl is there with the members of Foo Fighters, and, you know, it's just all these DC luminaries. And before the show, I spoke to the organizer and said, yeah, we did these shows with Henry Rollins, and tried to, you know, you try and work your way in to like, oh, he's going to say, oh, I remember that. And so in introducing us, he goes out and says, and this band says they've worked with me before, the Pie Tasters. It's like just the derision. And like, he just was like, I don't know who the hell these guys are, but they say they worked with me. It's like, thanks, Hank.
Yeah, it's so kind of you. Thank you for living up.
Didn't even put me over for.
Yeah, he sounds like a guy who would pretend to not have met you before. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, we've met a lot of those guys.
Well, yeah, like the, well, essentially
the
everyone.
Very LA guy who's pretending he's not, who likes to pretend he's not LA.
Yes, that I will absolutely give you. You're spot on.
From what I've heard, I think it is part of his personality that he just doesn't have a lot of friends and doesn't remember who he's met or whatever.
I can see that. Sure. Yeah. Which is always a good sign of a good person. So I want to get into,
you know, James Brown remembered me. Okay.
So what do you,
that's all I mean, care about.
Like if James Brown knows who you are and is mentioning it on Stern, nothing against old Hank.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm not going to be pretending about the perfect gene. I can tell you right now, these aren't them, but they did send me a pair, and it's the most miraculous pair of jeans I've ever worn, and I'm not even joking. The Perfect Gene team gave me this whole script to read, and I'm literally reading it word for word right now, including this sentence. That said, I actually tried the gene, and it's fucking awesome. But in this, still the script, that's why you shouldn't have written anything for me, because I can't read. But is this still the script or me? You'll never know. Well, today's sponsor. It's the script. Good point. I should have just left that out. You know, Perfect Gene, which are awesome when you sent me the jeans. Today's sponsor, the Perfect Gene, finally solved all of your denim difficulties. They made it great looking, perfect fitting, and also as comfortable as sweatpants. And I'm not kidding. I feel like a pregnant woman wearing those fake jeans.
I love those.
When I just slide into them. I feel so juicy. And I tried them. I promise. They're what they're paying me. They're paying me to say this, but I'm telling you, they are a delight. What's the secret? A special denim fabric that's super soft and has the perfect amount of stretch so you can squat, do yoga, or just sit around all day, you know, wearing them or watching TV or other stuff. It's finally time to stop crushing your balls in uncomfortable jeans by going to the shitty jeans. Go to theperfectgene.nyc. Our listeners get 15% off their first order and free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges when they use the code, ready? Dave15. That's Dave15. That's me right there and all the bitches looking. DAVE15. They're all like, wow, what's that smell? After you purchase, you are going to get free shipping. Dave15. It's honestly the nicest pair of jeans I've ever gotten. When I got them, I put them on and I thought I'd ordered them. I forgot that they had been a sponsor because they were so comfortable and they were unbelievably comfortable. Go to theperfectgene.nyc. Use code Dave15. Do it right now.
And just to say, after you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. So please let them know that you heard them from here and support our show.
Yeah, guys.
We would love that.
We're giving you a good show. Least you can do is say where you got your fucking pants.
Brilliant.
All right, anyway. So I got to ask this. Were you a fan of, did you ever cross paths with Gigi Allen?
I didn't, but I had, I'm friends with this woman and she lived in New York and was, she has the framed toilet seat from CBGB's when they close. She stole the toilet seat that's
how
in all those
how many diseases?
She has enough. And,
for her.
Or she has a very good immunity. From
that's the ultimate vaccine is the toilet seat from CBGB's.
But she, the movie, you know, the Gigi Allen movie, I can't think of the name of it.
Oh, we actually have a trailer for it. It's called Hated. And there's also the Allens. The one that Todd Phillips did is Hated.
I think it's Hated. Yeah, because at the end, she's the one hailing the cab for him the night that he dies.
Hated. And,
she has this great story where he would come over to her apartment whenever he was playing shows in New York, and he was the only punk rock guy that would ever use a coaster. And he was just super polite. And would cross his legs and like ask for a coaster before he put his beard out.
He's like covered in his own feces and bleeding, but he's like, yeah, can I get a coaster?
Takes his shoes off at the door.
This was before the show. So it was before he had sex with his brother and cut himself.
but what a gentleman. I mean,
that's when punk was punk.
Yeah. That's a different level of just the self-harm. And do we have a quick clip of the, if people aren't familiar with Gigi, this is a great movie to watch with the fam called Hated. If not, oh, they're very slow. They don't like me. There you go.
That's our guy.
I would have to say that it's not funnier than Spinal Tap. It's very it's very heartbreaking how he was kind of used by his brother.
Yeah.
There's a book, a movie also called The Allens that kind of covers more of that, you know, involving his brother. But yeah, just the self-mutilation. And this was the show you would go to. And this is in the movie where they're just like in Brooklyn, I think, in a random warehouse too at the very end before he ends up passing away. Because he was going to kill himself on stage. That was sort of the promise.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, you can pull it now, but just so people are familiar with who we're talking about, we also have,
he was just grabbing the fans' interest at the end there.
Was he?
Yeah, I think he was.
That's right before he punched that lady in the
about
audience.
To get your old fans back, Dave.
Good. That guy just maced him.
Right.
Is that violence towards a woman?
Now that's a hate crime.
I've done way worse. Yeah, that's kind of the problem.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, that really is.
You said way worse things than my wife.
I say horrible things to women. That's nothing. Good thing there's not a camera on me all the time.
There's no woman there, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. A lot of them are just angry at the TV. There was also from the Germs. Darby Crash.
Darby.
And I assumed, I believe he deliberately OD'd in 1980, so you probably didn't cross paths.
No, I was 10.
Was that somebody that you were like, I knew him very well?
Yeah. I don't want to tell those stories. We started dating when I was 8.
But did that appeal to you at a young age when you're seeing stuff like that in the punk scene?
Yeah, that. Do you remember that Decline of the Western Civilization movie that chronicled the West Coast punk scene and Another State of Mind, where Social Distortion takes a school bus across country and then it breaks down and the band breaks up? And I mean, that's probably why we bought a school bus and decided to drive across country, because
that really is. Yeah.
I want to be like Mike Ness.
Of course. I was going to ask, I thought I read that like you guys were traveling around in a school bus and then on the first tour, everybody quit.
Yeah. Yeah. When we got back, they realized what a silly endeavor this was.
And yeah. He lost 19 members of the 31 piece band that he decided to bring on.
Then we went and bought a more expensive bus. That'll fix everything.
Yeah. You're like, just now there's less of us. We need more bus. Yeah. Darby Crash. What is it? What Crash Darby?
Darby Crash.
I'm reading Darby Crash. He died actually. I believe that it was the day after John Lennon.
Before,
oh, wow.
the day before
John Lennon, so it never really, he never got kind of the accolades that he deserved, because obviously the news was taken by.
Always stinks.
Yeah, it's not good when.
Unless you're Gary Condit.
Yeah, that's true. I bet you, there's a few celebrities that wish that something big in the news happened the day they died. David Carradine's probably top of that list.
Yeah. The guy from NXS.
Yeah, yeah, he really wishes it was on 9/11.
All the other people that died jerking.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, I think, a lot of people that kill themselves. And then you just have to pretend.
Accidental.
Yeah, and you're like, oh man, he just couldn't take life anymore. Are you sure? It seemed like he was enjoying it. Died doing what he loved.
Squeeze every last drop out of
belt
it.
Around his neck.
Well, he was also an icon of some kind and not just a chef who smoked.
Oh, Jesus.
He seemed like kind of a dick. I don't know.
No, I'll be honest. I it's like, no, I get it. You're miserable and you work downtown. The restaurant.
You have the greatest job in the world.
Yeah, yeah. You seriously have a travel show where you go around and eat stuff. Yeah, I'd kill myself too. What a horrible life. Yeah, please wax more fantastic about how shitty your life isn't. Anyway, he's dead. So, yeah, we actually have a clip from because I remember that movie from The Decline of Western Civilization.
How did you get the reputation that you have?
Oh yeah.
I guess we used to do stuff. I mean, back, you know, it was good to have that kind of reputation then, you know, but not anymore, because now we can't play anywhere.
Tell me, how is it that you're always getting hurt?
Well, first I did on purpose.
Yeah.
To keep from being bored.
He's come out of shows with huge scrapes and scratches and claw marks all over him and just pouring blood, but it always looks a lot worse than it is.
What's the worst time you ever got hurt?
Maced.
The whiskey. I cut my foot open.
Oh, God, that would be the worst. The whiskey?
I came downstairs to do an encore, and then I jumped on half a broken glass like that, and I had to get like 30 stitches.
So I was standing like right in front, and I was looking at his face, and like you ended up sitting down on the ground. And you were holding your foot like this, and you looked at it, and you just started going, you know, and then you stopped playing and stuff, and you just running around trying to find your
I love how messed up they are. We were like, oh, blood.
Blue hair. This just looks like a girl who worked at a comedy club and wouldn't return my texts when I was 25.
Yeah. She just went home with the feature act?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, Darby Crash, and, if you ever want to check that one out, but... Where can we check a lot out some of your music? I want to let people know before we get into this other ad read, because I want your ad to go out there.
The pietasters.com will keep you abreast of all Pie Taster happenings. Like I said, we got some shows coming up, and we're working on some new stuff. Joe Gittleman from the Bosstones, we've recorded one of a song that he wrote, and we're working on a video for that. Always got something cooking.
I want to get you to play on the show, but I don't have the room, and I don't know if you have the
figure something
self-esteem. Out. Self-esteem.
Oh no, we'd love to. We just need to book some shows in Texas, and then.
Oh, dude, you should. We gotta get you
next time definitely. We're coming through. We'll stop by and just build in a day to hang out with Dave.
Oh, dude, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, and before we get into a couple more stories, we got to talk about this. Have you wondered just exactly how to take our politicians? I don't understand why they word these. It's actually how it's worded. And I don't want to look at 8 o'clock tonight. You can watch a really great documentary that Glenn put together that I really enjoy. We obviously, by the time this airs, it's going to already be seen, but you should check it out. It's actually called Bought and Paid For. And it's a Blaze original. It's an original show that they put together, and it's tonight, which was 8 p.m. Eastern. Do I pretend this is live? Wednesday, it is live, guys. It just aired. Everybody loved it. Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern for a live preview event. Glenn's actually hosting tonight, and James Poulos. It's followed by the live premiere, like I said, of Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, streaming live on YouTube and Blaze. Check it out. I've got to watch a little bit of it today. It's fantastic. Head over to youtube.com/BlazeTV to watch it. You can subscribe to Blaze TV as well. It's a really, really, really fascinating look into something that we've constantly talked about, how all these people are worth millions and millions of millions, some billionaires, yet they're supposed to be on a servant's paycheck. Well, not a servant, but, you know, a public servant. so they serve the public, but then they're worth millions and they do insider trading. I gave away one of the secrets. Anyway, bought and paid for. How Politicians Get Filthy Rich. It just aired. Go. You can watch the replay. It's really great. Glenn did a fantastic job. Check it out. And also, QB,
shop with Quarter Black while we're at it.
Quarter Black is going to be places. It's going somewhere. Hey, I wanted to get into this, Angela. What was the video that you found? Because you know more about... I should have just said that. Sorry, I'm a little off today. So you know about beating men who want to be dirty piggies?
Yeah, I know a little bit.
Okay. So what happened with this Howard Stern writer?
Okay, so I believe she was actually Benji's girlfriend, Elisa. Okay.
Yes.
She was like a big personality on the Stern show. Earlier years.
Yeah, yeah.
Back when it was good.
Back when people enjoyed the show.
Yes, yeah. So she was arrested for beating what appeared to be her boyfriend on a... She was doing a live stream in her car. They got into a physical altercation. People saw it on the road, saw it on the live stream. So they called the police, and the police intervened. She was arrested, as you can see her mugshot there. But a lot of people don't know that this is actually a pay pig situation. And what a pay pig is a guy who has really low self-esteem, who pays you... to be mean to him.
That's right.
Yes. You
Which
know.
Is, ooh, yeah, it's how you got the job here.
Shut up.
I'm sorry. Go on.
Give me $200.
She almost broke my nose. Do we have a video of...
Of the actual, live stream?
The abuse that happened in the car.
I do.
Because honestly, when you read it, it's everybody siding with him, which seems a bit odd. I mean...
You know, different sentences that he...
Sarah, I'm sorry about this.
Oh.
Don't fucking talk.
He's very upset.
So like that.
He gives her money to punch him.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
But in this case, he wasn't expecting it. Yeah, and that's...
Oh.
But it goes on. He like starts pulling at her hair. She's getting mad at him.
We should show that. Just show the context of what happens. He ends up getting pissed. He's calling her the C word. Like, he's going to do much worse if he was more of a man. I shouldn't say more of a man, but bigger. So it ends up being this. You can cut it now.
Okay.
It gets too much. But that's what people see, but they don't understand. There's actually, right after it, I'm like, there has to be some context to this. So I look and I find all these videos where he's a complete dick in every way possible to like this one woman and a lot of women. So then I find out from her that this is a situation where he does pay this woman to behave like this. So what do you think? Is it her fault? And she's driving. You don't pull a driver's hair.
I was hoping for the car to crash and for them both to die.
That's my hope too.
When I was watching that, and you know, even before I had the context,
there's no
skinny armed weirdo.
I hate that.
There's just something so off about that guy.
He said that he had 17 figures in his bank account, and you're like, sure, you don't. You don't even
apparently
understand.
He's a millionaire.
Yeah, well, that's what he says, but I mean,
no,
apparently
I think
he's a quadrillionaire.
17.
17 is an absurd.
Jeff Bezos.
Yes. He's like, I have 17 figures. What do you do, losers? It's like, I don't know. We don't lie about numbers like that.
Mm, we count.
Yes. So, yeah, she was arrested, and somebody was watching the live stream actually called the cops, so the officers kind of pulled up a little bit right behind them, but they feel that Eliza, is that her name?
Elisa
was the aggressor and arrested and booked for domestic battery. And Angela, read this, the part where it's the paper. Oh, I shouldn't keep reading. That's
it. But he was asking for it, right?
Yeah. That's the thing. You're paying this woman. I mean, they're both, like you said, they're both terrible. You know, the fact that they both survived is an atrocity, but... If in a perfect world.
And what's his safe word? How is she supposed to know that this has gone beyond yeah. what he was paying for?
I think it's you almost broke my nose.
When he starts bleeding. His glasses are broken.
It's like when I pull your hair aggressively like I would another woman.
Oh, man.
Oh, God, I hate people so much. We have new movie coming out. I'm actually kind of excited about it. And I'll go ahead and admit it. Well, as soon as I find those papers, we're going to get right into it. It is about Amy Winehouse. Oh. And were you a fan?
Queen.
Yeah, dude, she was incredible. I love the fact that she had that basically 1960s Motown sound, and what, in the mid 2000s?
Yeah, just was not expecting that to you know, be a thing and be as popular as it was.
It became, I think, one of the largest selling albums in the United States, let alone you know, over in England. And Back in Black tells the story of Amy Winehouse, with the role of Winehouse played by Marisa Abella. Jack O'Connell plays her charismatic, no-good husband and addicted enabler, Blake Fielder Civil, who was, in fact, all of those things. Black to Black is described as an urgent... I thought it was called... Way wrong on the name.
That's called a typo.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
So I was right this
back
time?
Back to yes. Black.
I thought it was Back to Black. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Because Back in Black, it'd be an AC/DC movie. And Black to Black just sounds like a rock Kevin Hart buddy comedy. So it's an urgent, warm, heartfelt dramatization scripted by, we can watch a second of it, right?
We can. I can play the trailer, but you guys are going to have to add commentary.
Okay. Because she died of, you know, people don't, I'm sure you know, but she died at the age of 27, the 27 Club, back in 2011 of alcohol poisoning. Let's take a look.
I want people to hear my voice.
The problem I have, I don't mind it being grand, but I just hope it doesn't follow every single trope and cliche of all of these movies.
Like, what are the, what are those?
Well, the trailer's a good omen.
Basically, her starting by saying, I just want to make people hear my voice. Like, that's not, it's a bizarre thing that no one probably said in life.
No.
And then... You know, and then it's like, I hope I make it, then you make it big immediately. Like, well,
they just always look like Ernest Walk Hard.
Yes, they do.
You think?
I was just thinking that, yeah.
It's all it is. And that's...
You think that movie would have killed that, but...
No. And I want to watch it, but it's exactly what, at parts, you think it is. And then it's this part where it's like, oh, she's really hit it big. Number one around the world. It's crazy. Look how big you've gotten. But uh-oh. No, she loves her dad, but is she doing drugs, even though she's been singing I Don't Want to Go to Rehab right. since the start?
And I think we're getting...
And now she's running, and it's like that. When she's laying with the guy...
She's running away from addiction?
Yes, and she's okay. And she doesn't, I guess. No matter how hard you run. And then she's laying with him going, I want to be more than a singer. I want to be a mother, and I want to be... And it's like, you didn't have this conversation. You were just like, is that beer?
Mm.
Cigarettes, please.
I think I want some more of that.
Yes. I like more beer. I wanted to be a mother until I destroyed my womb with liquor.
Yes, it just sounds. I think I can handle another one. Spoiler alert.
You can't. Well, and I feel bad that the real one died. I just hate that they always take the version that's been made 1,000 times and try to... It's like you said, it's Walk Hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... Oh, you don't want to do these drugs, do we?
I think I do.
Yeah, you don't want to do these drugs, Amy. They're going to make all your problems go away.
Make sex even better.
Yes. And you
that's
never...
Just, well, I mean, that's just Hollywood never, now, and it all seems like it's written by AI.
It does.
And it's...
And you never once paid
for it's drugs. Not. And it's technically not. It's just...
It's not even rebooting. Well. It's just taking the same script, and it's like... Take Johnny Cash's name out and put Amy Winehouse's name.
I was just going to say, they're like, and you know, maybe we can make it longer and then we can do an entire show, you know, about...
Miniseries.
Yes, a miniseries.
Okay. We should do our
Netflix
own.
Netflix with this.
All we right. should. We should do one for you.
I'd love to.
Yes. Let's make it more real. And actually, let's make it over the top. It'll be called the Pie Tasters and Rollins. Sorry.
We've got true stories that would make it seem like they're made up. So
that's what you want, though, in a band.
Let's spitball.
Yeah, I think you should do. I think that's why I actually liked Almost Famous.
Oh yeah.
When it came out, it was the version that wasn't necessarily real, but it just felt like it was, like, of a band that was that.
What everybody thinks a band would be like.
Yeah. Right, and like even when the plane's going down, and it's just like, I'm gay, and then it just steadies out. It's so well done. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, if you saw more bands being that open and putting out something like that, like, this is our real story, you'd be more interested. Because even though, like, the I Am a Golden God, I believe that was Zeppelin, or taking it off of... maybe Pink Floyd, I can't remember, but yeah, when he just jumps off the house on acid into the pool, like there were like little pieces from the real rock world that made it in there. And that's what I mean, for me, like I love music. Like what you guys do is astonishing. I could never do it. I have no rhythm and I have no ability, but I go to so many concerts because it's just, it's mind blowing.
Right back at you. Yeah. If I could write a joke, I'd be in a much better position than paying horns.
You'd be us. But that's, that's great though.
But it's always the, you know, the grass is greener kind of thing.
It is. And I think that there's at least a healthy respect between artists when they see that. And I think for some reason, comics and actors and, you know, musicians kind of always want to do that other thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. And sometimes they're better at that other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that sound is.
It's music.
Is the band here? Are they warming up?
Oh, it might be for the show they're going to be doing.
Yeah.
That is back in 2 hours ago because the show's live. Let's go to the end of the world.
Well, they're playing us out.
Astonishingly rude. Mm-hmm. 99 cents only stores are closing. 371 locations nationwide. So I'm very sorry for all the people that just got here from the border. What 99 cent stores would you have prevented the stores from having?
What?
What 99 cent store items would have prevented the stores from having to close?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear because there's someone
playing music.
Yes. What items?
If the keeps on giving.
All right. What's an item at a 99-cent store? Let's just call it that. Matt?
Yep. Gwyneth Paltrow vagina-scented candles.
All right. Angela?
Ed Asner boner pills.
They make you softer. A man.
Whoopi Goldberg queef-flavored Pop-Tarts.
Ooh.
Delightful.
And a waxy.
I'm going to say any book written by someone who works here. Good night.